Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another week of Black Law and Legal Lies, where we specialize in the legal lies. My name is Dan, and you can keep up with me on Twitter and on IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. Keep up with the show on all social media platforms at Black Law Podcast, as well as on YouTube. Now, my co-host Dan is unavailable this week, so I'm going to do something a little different, and I'm going to play a recent conversation I had on the latest episode of A Few Screws Loose, where I talked to my homie and co-host over there, P from Charlotte, about his life as a public servant, a firefighter slash EMT specifically. He talks about the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, and how the job affected him and how it still affects him to this day. Now, I know, you know, a lot of people see the glamorous side of some of these jobs, such as being in the military, being police officers, being firefighters, and it looks exciting and it looks like you're saving lives every day. And that might not necessarily be the case. So this is the conversation I had with my co-host, P. Now, if you want to check out the full episode, go on over to A Few Screws Loose, the podcast. Check us out. But this is the gist of it. Hope you enjoy.
Fuck Steven Seagal. That's a slogan for today. Fuck Steven Seagal.
So I'm joined by
P from Charlotte. You can catch me on Instagram and on Twitter at P from Charlotte.
There's a lot of people that, especially in teenagers, right, that want to become cops when they grow up, want to become firefighters, EMS, and they see it, even people who want to join the military as well. They like everything that's shown to them are the glamorous parts of the job. Like, yo, Call of Duty, that's the military. You know what I mean? The police officers, yeah, I'm going to be out here fighting crime, or firefighter, I'm going to be out here fighting fires and saving lives and going into burning buildings and, you know, bringing people out. That's the only part that's like that most people see or even think about when they think of these jobs, man. And I know from talking to you that 80% of your job was goddamn training.
Well, more than that, actually, and it's not glamorous. And these people like to think that you just get these jobs and then you have an incident and you go do it. It's lots of planning you have to do to conduct these rescues, right? Every engine, every unit, let me say, which is a different truck. I'm being careful with my words because people in the fire department know the difference between engine and truck. But every piece of fire equipment that responds to a call has a different responsibility. So you may have people trapped and you might be the first in engine. Well, your job is to bring the attack line in and put the fire out. Second engine is supposed to get supply, is supposed to establish water supply and pull a backup line, usually upstairs. The first due squad, which is a rescue squad, or the truck, whoever gets there first, they conduct the rescues. They do the search and they conduct rescues. And it's not as glamorous as you think, man. A lot of the time you can't find people. People die all the time. Everybody thinks it's so glamorous. Here's the thing, man. I don't remember people I saved. I remember people that are dead. And anybody that doesn't say that is probably lying, or they had an extraordinary situation where they really did save someone. I mean, I remember a couple people who we saved, but the people that you couldn't save or that died, or who you came and you realized, man, I couldn't save them, they stick with you a lot more. And, you know, you run a lot of stuff. It's not glamorous. It's not. I mean, look, I'm not trying to tell nobody it's bad either. I mean, it is exciting. But if you expect to run fires all day, doing rescues all day, being a hero, having people look up to you and respect you, this is what I used to say about people in the military who would say no one thanks the military enough. I would always say, you know, real people in the military don't care what civilians think about them. They only want the respect and admiration of their peers. Same goes with fire department. I don't know, you know, cops seem to be different. They think their shit don't stink for some reason. But even with firefighters, we don't sit here and expect nobody to thank us. We only want respect and admiration, I don't want to say admiration. I want respect and acknowledgement of a good job from your shift mates and from your colleagues. That's all. We barely talk about the work when we get home. I mean, it's not glamorous. You run more EMS calls than anything, 90-something percent in a lot of cases. But, you know, Man, you do a little of everything, man. You really do a lot of everything.
So speaking of these EMS calls, right? Now, this is, I had a conversation with my younger cousin who wanted to be a firefighter. And, you know, I didn't dissuade him. I just told him what little I knew, which is pretty much shit that I got from you, right? But the one thing that I told him is nothing can prepare you. And I know this firsthand, too, in the real world. Nothing can prepare you to experience death, especially over and over and over again. So you're training,
absolutely,
right?
Nothing.
When you were in the academy, how did they try to prepare you, especially mentally, to deal with the amount of carnage you were going to see? I know you've seen people split in half. I know you've seen all kinds of death and burn victims. Like, did the academy prepare you for that?
Hell no. They don't spend no time doing that. They don't have time. I mean, they just assume you're going to see it. You know, they'll show you pictures of, like, gory pictures of people that got killed. But at the same time, that doesn't mean anything, because here's the thing. I would rather run the gruesome DOA. Like when we there was this motorcyclist who was driving up Route 1 at like 100 something miles an hour, hit a street sign, split himself in half. DOA. You know, you get there, cover them up. You don't got to deal with them. The harder calls are the calls when people are sick and they have a heart attack in front of your face, or they stroke out, or, you know, they have a severe injury and they're not dead when you get there. And then you see them deteriorate and their family is screaming and hollering and crying, and they're screaming. And, you know, the smells that you smell from certain incidents and bodily fluids. And I mean, look, you're not. And here's the thing. You can't react in a, like, oh, my God, manner. You have to be calm. Even when they're saying, is he going to be OK? I got asked that many times from dead people. Spouses say, is he going to be OK? You just have to say, we're doing the best we can, ma'am or sir. You can't tell them that you're doing that. They're going to be fine. Or, you know, that's actually a major no, no. We don't diagnose. Mm-hmm. So they don't prepare you for the carnage. And I mean, I'm not saying they should. Because, and honestly, in all honesty, there is no real way to prepare you for it. I don't care if they take you to the hospital to see cadavers. They've done that for us. There is no preparation for real world experience. And what you see, what you touch, what you feel, what you smell, what you think about, what you dream about, there's just no preparation for it. End of story.
Man, so when you were at your station, right, your first station, you're a rookie. Did any of your co-workers try to help prepare you for that? And then kind of the follow-up question, I know that this episode sounded like an interview, and in a sense it is. Did any of your co-workers try to prep you ahead of time? And your first call where you experienced death, do you remember that, your very first one?
Well, to answer your first question, no, nobody's talked about that. It's an unwritten rule in the fire department. We don't talk about stuff like that, because you have something called the Critical Incident Stress Management Team that comes out from that comes to stations that ran particularly harsh calls, and they debrief you. And the debriefing consists of this. On the way back to the station, your officer would say, hey, is everybody OK? You say, yeah. And then they tell the debriefing team, don't worry, don't come. We don't need you. So, you know, if you say I'm having problems, then you open up the door for behavioral health, going through the system, getting terminated for having anxiety, PTSD, like I did when I came forward. And that's what people try to avoid. So we really don't talk about it. We don't. A lot of the time they crack jokes on scenes, like for burn victims when they're dead. You know, you hear people say we have one crispy critter. And they don't say it for jokes, to be funny. It's just, yeah. If you see it so much, if you don't have a sense of humor about it or call it something, then it is, yeah, it would drive
coping,
you crazy.
Coping mechanism, yeah, but, pretty much, because we use that
the other
shit
problem
in the streets.
The other problem is, too, though, you have to be aware of who's around you, because yeah. You can have family members around you when you say these things, and that's happened before. And I never talk like that, because I've always taken it way too seriously. More than I should, and that's probably why I'm in the situation I'm in now. But that was the answer to your first question, and I think I went so long, I forgot what your second question was.
Have you ever jerked off inside of a KFC?
Well, it is one time.
That's why they're getting rid of the wedges. Man, the second question was, do you remember your reaction to the first call you ran where there was a fatality?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Well, first, I saw my first fatality before I even got in. I was in the process, and I was literally a minute behind when a guy on 95 South past Springfield flipped out of his Jeep Wrangler and his brain was on the sidewalk. I mean, it was on the pavement, and I didn't know. And I was literally like 3 feet away from it, and my car drove through it, and I said, oh, man, that's his brain. So I saw that before I even got in. My first. Let me think, because we were in the fire academy when the DC sniper was going on. So it was a lot of shit happening.
Damn, I forgot about the sniper.
Yeah, that was when I was in the academy. We couldn't even run off grounds for a few weeks. We heard the phone. We heard the calls come through when the shootings were happening and everything. Like at Tyson's, man, they blew that lady's head off. They blew that lady's head off, man.
At the gas station?
I know what happened on it. Yeah, no, at Tyson's Corner in the parking lot, in the parking deck.
Okay.
I saw the pictures. Her head was gone. The EMS call was so disturbing. The husband, old man, was with her for a long time and said, please help me, my wife. She's been shot. Her head is gone. And her head was gone. I got sidetracked. My first DO, well, my first death that I ran was on a ride-along. At the end of EMS school, you do ride-alongs with medic units. And I was at station 30 on my ride along, and we had a cardiac arrest. That's CPR. And I remember it was an older woman, and we were doing CPR, and I just remember how ugly it was. Like, I was like, this is not how it looks in the movies. You feel the ribs breaking and cracking. You got vomitus. It's called vomitus. It's, you know, coming back up. If you don't use your bag valve mask, that's where you squeeze air. If you don't have a good seal, and it's not going into their lungs instead, and it's going to their stomach, it'll come up in it's called vomitus, and you can hear it. It sounds like gargling. She was dead. I mean, her eyes were gray and everything. But that was my first actual death that I ran, and I was only 4 weeks in recruit school. I wasn't even a firefighter yet. I was just getting certified as an EMT. So, I remember that call like it was yesterday.
During that day, right, or that shift, were you 24 on and were you on a regular schedule?
No, since we were still in the fire academy, we showed up at 7, well, before in time for 7 o'clock lineup. And then I don't remember. I don't know if the day ended at 7 p.m. or if we left at 4 or 5. I don't recall. We didn't do a full 24 because we were only EMS students. We were still in the academy.
Gotcha.
But just during that day, I ran a cardiac arrest. I ran a man that had a stroke. He didn't die that day. And I ran, what else did I run? A gas leak. I was on the medic unit, though. I thought every day was like that. I said, shit, this is going to be like this every day? Thankfully, it wasn't like that every day. But my normal station that I ended up going to, my favorite station, we ran some stuff there now. It was pretty active.
Man, so that the one thing that I'd ask myself, right? And you know, I was in the process to join the fire department after you got in. Couple people looked out for me, but unfortunately Hurricane Katrina messed that up, or maybe fortunately Hurricane Katrina messed that up.
Fortunately, and the person who messed that up for you is an asshole. Yeah. And she should have known better. And if I felt like it and you felt like it, she could have got reported and gotten fired, because what she did was fucked up. And I didn't try to tell you to fight it and push it, because I started to realize already 3 years into my career at that time that the particular department I was in was full of shit, yeah. To be honest.
Man, yeah. Because you was like, hey, man, you know, I can holler at some people if you want me to, but man, only if you want me to. I'm like, nah, don't worry about it. It's
you ain't
all
missed
good.
Nothing.
Yeah, but
you ain't missed nothing, because look at me now. Like, seriously, look at me now. Because yeah. Think about this. December 3rd marks the 10-year anniversary from when they fired me. So,
yeah, man.
I mean, think about it. You know, look what happened to me. So you did the right decision.
Yeah, yeah. I don't regret it whatsoever. See, at the time, for me, it was honestly a money thing. I needed money. I needed more money than I was making. And see, well, Well, luckily, I didn't have a child on the way like you did. So, yeah, I was able to.
Mine was already there.
Damn, was it? Yes, damn.
I couldn't stay after and study with the class after the academy, and I had a hard time because I had to get back home because my daughter. He's not a hard worker. He doesn't stay after class and practice. I'm like, nigga, I got to get home. I got a fucking one-year-old at home. What the fuck you want me to do?
Man, people don't understand that shit. And I bet you a lot of them motherfuckers already had kids that were older, and they probably leave the kids at home with their mother. And you know how that shit is, man.
Them bozos didn't have no fucking kids. Only a few of them did. A lot of them bozos was just a bunch of young hotshots who thought their shit didn't stink.
Yeah, man. So the reason I bring up me about to go through the process is this. I'm wondering if I would be able to go to sleep at night after just say the first fatality, you know what I mean? Because you and I were kind of wired the same when it comes to certain things. We both take death very, very seriously. Death is not something that I can deal with very well. Even, you know, family members and stuff. I don't even like hearing about the shit on the news. I don't like it when even celebrities die. You know, we don't know these celebrities, but that doesn't make it any less hurtful or whatever. Like, just say like a Kobe Bryant or a Chadwick Boseman, man. Yo, I sat up all night those nights when they died. Like, damn, man. It just goes to show death can happen at any point to anybody's. Nobody's exempt. Celebrities aren't exempt. Rich people aren't exempt. Look at Steve Jobs. Like, nobody's exempt from this shit.
It's the great equalizer.
Yeah. So I just wonder how, you know, if I would have been able to sleep at night after seeing some of this stuff, man. Because other shit keeps me awake. Like I said, celebrities dying or family members that are ill, man. So were you able to sleep at night?
Hell no. I don't sleep now because of it. I mean, I learned early on, don't sleep. I had problems sleeping, you know, very early in my career because overnight is when the serious calls come in. So when a call comes in at 2:30 in the morning, you know, most likely it's either a working house fire that's already getting it. It probably got victims in it because they were asleep. It's probably a really bad fatal wreck because it's 2 or 3 in the morning, or somebody got shot or murdered. It's usually a bad call. So I learned it's easier to stay up all night and respond to these calls than it would be to try to sleep and get woke up, have to get your gear on, and then get from the time of the call being placed to getting on scene in less than 7 minutes. And by the call being placed, I mean by when they called 911. So you're asleep, and then from when the time that the person calls 911 to when the dispatcher gets you dispatched and you get up out of bed, get your gear on, get on a unit, and then go down the road and get to the call, all that has to happen within 7 minutes or less. And damn, it just got easier for me to just stay up. People would laugh and say, why are you sleeping in uniform? When I would lay in a bed, I'm like, so I don't have to waste time changing my clothes. And after a while, I just started staying up because, you know, when you close your eyes and try to sleep, you know, bad shit happens at night. And that's, you know, I'm not saying that's why I don't sleep now. Just the overall anxiety now of the years and the toll that job took on me. Look, all my uncles were in and they said the same thing. They used to make fun of me and say I'm like my uncles because I would go to the 7-Eleven by the firehouse at 12 midnight. You know, I would stay up all night because it's like, why sleep? Yeah. For what?
And think about it, too, man. I'm sure the same can be said for people who aren't in those kind of jobs. But for somebody every single day let's take somebody that's severely depressed, right? You hate fucking life, right? You hate waking up every day because your days suck, your life sucks, you hate your life, right? That's typically how people who are depressed feel. They don't, they're just, what's the word, malaise? You're just like, blah, man, I hate this shit. I don't like this shit. So I knew somebody, one of my friends.
Melancholy. That's the word. Malaise is if you're sick. General malaise is a term we use if you're just sick.
Yeah.
Melancholy is if you're depressed.
Nah, nigga, I'm sick of life. But yeah, man, nigga,
I'm melancholic about this general malaise that I've been feeling.
Man,
I want to go to Malaysia and see if I can get it cured.
Damn, they probably take offense to that shit. Man, the my homie, you know him too, a guy we grew up with. His grandfather would stay up to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, right? He wouldn't go to sleep until sunrise, right? And we just found that we was like, okay, nah, it's because he's old and he can do whatever the fuck he wants. Maybe he's a night person, whatever. Come to find out, after asking him about it, he was afraid that he was going to die in his sleep and he wouldn't be able to watch his wife wake up. So he wouldn't go to sleep until his wife woke up, because that just means he got to see her for another day. And it sounds kind of simple and silly, but not really when you're 80 something years old. You know what I mean? It's like it's almost like you're afraid to go to sleep because, hey, you might not wake up. And the same could be said going to sleep at 6 in the morning. But at least you get to see your wife wake up and know that she's OK for another day. So, yeah, man, I can see exactly how that shit could affect your sleeping patterns and disrupt your sleep. And also, let's not forget, that shit takes years off of your life too, doesn't it?
Yeah, when I got in, I don't know what it is now, but when I got in, the average lifespan of a firefighter was 52. And if you add up the number of years, the amount of hours we work per week, I mean, if you compare the average 20, it's not an average 20-year career. If you compare a 25-year firefighter and the amount of hours they worked to someone who worked 40 hours a week till they were 65, I mean, the hours that we work in 25 years compared to them are so much more. It's, you wouldn't even believe the number. If I don't remember the number offhand, but if I did the math, you would be like, there's no fucking way. But yeah, working 72 hours a week in a job like that.
Y'all sleep all day though, man.
It really fucks you up.
But y'all sleep all day and be playing board games and shit, man.
Yeah, that's what they think. I tell you what, let me tell you something about where my department was. We didn't play. My battalion, I used to think they were hard asses, and I praise my chiefs, because they raised a lot of officers, a lot of chiefs, the fire chief where I live now, one of my good friends, was one of my shift mates. My battalion always held our firefighters to a higher standard, right? Because we were the 6th battalion. A lot of black people go down there, poor side. So other battalions would look down on us like we were some trash, but yet our chief was always strict on us. He would, if your sideburns were a centimeter past your ear, he would say, cut those sideburns. If you had 5 o'clock shadow and you just shaved at 7 o'clock in the morning, he'd say, shave that face. We had coveralls that we could, that they supplied to us. If we were PTing and we got a call, we can throw coveralls on. He told us he don't give a shit what we doing. He better not see us respond to a call with coveralls on. He was real strict, and we drilled so much.
Wait,
yo.
Explain. Like, what's PTing?
Physical training, working out. We get an hour of workout time a day. Now, that doesn't mean we get an hour and are allowed to not respond to calls. That means that a shift officer, station commander or shift leader is required by SOP to allow their firefighters at least 1 hour of physical fitness time per day. That's all that means. All
right.
But I mean, they trained officers. So a lot of the chiefs you see getting promoted now, a lot of the officers, a lot of the lieutenants, a lot of chiefs all over the country, they were my former friends, former coworkers, and they came from my battalion because, you know, he knew the stigma. And I mean, we drilled so much. I used to think that it was insane. We drilled on fucking Thanksgiving. You know, in the fire department, Thanksgiving is supposed to be a great day. We drilled on Thanksgiving. We drilled on 9/11. We drilled on Christmas. We would drill at least once a tour. And if anybody don't know, that's a lot, because we're just talking about station level drills. You also got MUD drills, which are multi-unit drills that are organized with other stations from around the county. And you also have ORS, which is rotational operations. I forget what the A stands for, rotational schedule. So every station has to go through 4 ORS sessions every year, which is more training. And then you got to run calls in between. You don't get to go out of service when you're training. So you may have 2,000 feet of hose laid out on the ground because you're doing, you know, engine company drills. You get a call, you got to fucking throw that hose back up as fast as you can to respond to that call. And if it's a fire, it really sucks, because then you got to turn around and let somebody else take your call because you can't get the supply line back on.
Now, what other kind of drills did you guys do?
high angle rescues, lowering systems, rappelling from high altitude, swift water drills, ice rescues, how to cut cars. People call them the jaws of life, but we call them cutters and spreaders. How to get around the airbags from and where all the airbags are in the different different cars and all their frames, where the weak points were, how to secure a door so it doesn't close back on you, means of egress, entrances. We would ride around the neighborhood and the captain would pull up in front of a house and tell me, looking at the outside of the house, he would tell me, is that a gas fed house or electric? And I would have to know. He would ask me, does that house have a basement? And we'd just be sitting outside. There would be no go inside and study. And I would have to know. He would say, is that a split foyer, a bi-level, tri-level, multi-level, a colonial? What is that? Is that balloon frame? Where would you say the bathroom is? Do they have an exterior basement entrance? What do you think? Because there are clues on houses where you see the pipe stems come out at, where you see windows located, where the door is in relation to the nearest window, how the windows are stacked above and below each other. I mean, it's a lot. They ask you what type of construction, type one, type two, type three, type four, type five. What would you do if you had a fire in here? They would ask you when we saw railroads go by, trains, they'd say, what type of rail carrier is that? You'd have to identify if it was a compressed gas container, a compressed liquid container, highly flammable container, if it had liquid nitrogen or whatever, if it was just dry goods. You'd have to know your placards, all of them. You'd have to know your MSDS guidebook like the back of your hand. So you'd have to look at, you'd ride down the street and your captain would say, hey, you see that tractor trailer right there? You see the placards? Tell me what that truck's carrying. And you'd have to know. You'd have to know the UN number, which is the number that's on the placard. You'd have to know the color designator, the symbol, if it's flammable, if it's an oxidizer, what hazard to life is it? It's a lot, man.
And I just sent you that joint. You remember, maybe about 2 weeks ago, I sent you a picture of one of them placards. I was like, hey, man, fuck is this shit?
The multi-placard, yeah.
Hey. I was like, because I thought it was untrained, regular Joe. I thought it was a fucking bomb shelter. I'm like, hey, man, they got a bomb shelter in this joint. Nigga said, nah, man, you're going to blow up if you go in that motherfucker, though. Man.
I mean, it's good that they had that out there because there's a lot of irresponsibility with placards. It's actually against the law to have a mislabeled placard because you might have a tractor trailer that has a placard that says, ordinary combustibles or dry cargo, right? But, in actuality, it may have, I don't know, maybe carrying, I don't know, let's say an oxidizer. It may be carrying something like magnesium or something like that, and it catches fire. So you try to put some water on it, and then bam, you see green flames everywhere, and you got more fire. If we would have known, we could have used a dry chem extinguisher. We would have used a CO2 extinguisher as long as there wasn't no electricity. You got to know all that shit, man. Yeah. Purple K, foam, when to use foam. I mean, pretty much, look, every single call that there is possible to run, we ran. Water, like I said a while ago, water rescues. And I'm not even mentioning EMS issues like heart attacks, traumas. I know how to deliver babies, breech births, prolapse cords. I can pretty much do it all. Yeah. And you don't just forget that shit when you stop working.
Now, speaking of that, too, because I kind of want to get into the positives of the job, too, again, because not trying to dissuade anybody, but just trying to bring some realities to it. Man, I forgot what I was about to ask you now. Oh, yeah. Abandoning duty, right? So, well, not really abandoning duty, but you had
abandonment.
You had to react. So you're off duty. You're going to 7-Eleven to get something to drink. You see somebody fall and bust their head open. You are required to act, right?
Well, yeah, you have a duty to act. If you're a licensed EMT or paramedic, you have duty to act. So if I don't do anything and someone finds out I witnessed it and I was there and I didn't do anything about it, then I can be held liable in court. Now, here's the other flip side of that, though. I know cops have qualified immunity and people think that EMS workers have the same. There have been many EMS workers that have helped someone on the street when they were off and then end up getting sued. But that's rare. I mean, that usually doesn't fly. But duty to act is when you see an incident and you must act. If now you can only act within your scope of practice. So if you're acting outside of your scope of practice, that's against the law. So if I'm just an EMTB, for example, and then somebody has says they need this medication or that medication, I'm not allowed to give it to them because my scope of practice does not permit me to give certain drugs. We only can give oxygen, and that's, believe it or not, that's a drug. And that's pretty much it as an EMTB. Now, obviously, I know how to do a lot more than that. I know a lot about medications because of that job and how to start them, how much to give, what are the contraindicators, how to start the IVs, what sizes to use. But if you go beyond your scope of practice, you're in trouble. Then you have the issue, too, where if you get started on someone and you don't hand, it's called transfer of care. If you don't transfer care to someone of an equal or higher level of training than you, then that's called abandonment. And you really get in trouble then. Once you start, you can't just leave somebody until you officially transfer care to someone of equal or higher level than you.
So who would be lower than an EMTB? Like, say they roll up and you doing compressions, right? Then you're off duty again. You got a Slurpee in one hand and you're doing compressions on someone. And what would be lower than a B? A C?
No, EMTB is just EMT basic.
Okay.
So you got EMTB, which is EMT basic. You got EMTP, which is paramedic. You have EMTI, which is intermediate. There used to be, in VF, where I used to work at, an EMT branch that was in between EMT basic, like me, which is just a basic life support who rides the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an EMTI, which was in between, that can do medic things. They consolidated that now, and now in Fairfax, you're required to have a national paramedic registry. I mean, you can pretty much, you can do a lot with that. And I learned a lot riding with them because I had to drive the medic unit a lot as a firefighter and an EMTB. So I got a lot of experience just driving and running medic calls. But the average Joe Blow is below the EMTB. We go through 4 weeks of training in a fire academy for EMT. And that 4 weeks is 8 hours a day, minimum 4 weeks in a row. It's usually a year or two in college to get your EMTB certification. To be an EMT, you got to get certifications as you go as well.
So you can, like, all right, you got your Slurpee, you're off duty, somebody heart attack, you're doing compressions, and then the dude from the local YMCA is like, yo, man, I know how to do CPR. I teach a CPR class. Here, let me take over. If you let him take over, you're fucked.
No, I'm sorry. Yes, because who the fuck cares if he teaches a CPR class? Firefighters are CPR instructors, too, most of the time. Lots of us have the option to get our CPR instructor. To be an EMTB, you have to be certified by the AHA, the American Heart Association, to do CPR. And most firefighters, for overtime, they'll get their CPR certification to teach. So there is not a CPR teacher that can tell us, hey, I'm a CPR instructor, let me do it, because there are things that they can do in CPR there are things that we can do for CPR that they are not allowed to do because we're EMTBs.
Mm-hmm.
So, they may know how to, they may know how to do mouth to mouth. They may know how to do compressions, but they may not know how to, they may know how to work a defibrillator. But at the same time, they don't know about any potential interactions. They may not know about, how to properly use the bag valve mask. They may not know what type of, drugs to put in, because, you pump in adrenaline to get the heart going. I mean, you pump in a lot of drugs to try to get the heart going again. You have I forget what it's called. It was almost like a pace setter that you put on their heart to start beating it for them. It's lots. Just because they're an instructor don't mean they know more than you. As an EMTB, we know everything a CPR instructor knows, plus a lot more. So you'd have to tell that man, even if someone walked up to me and said, I'm a doctor, let me take it from here, I would have to refuse them unless they showed me their credentials.
Damn.
You can't just take their word for it.
Yeah.
So, there are times when I saw accidents or injuries happen, like on football games, and I would have to walk up when they would try to remove a football player's helmet. And I would have to walk up and yell at him and say, don't do that. And they would look at me like I was crazy. I'd pull out my EMT card and say, y'all need to spread out. I got control of this, and call 911, because no matter what your level of expertise is, step one in any emergency, I don't give a fuck if you're Dr. Fauci, you call 911. End of story. So before you even get started, you call 911, or you get started and have that person who said, hey, I know CPR. You have that person call 911.
Hey, I know CPR. All right, buddy. Thanks. Yeah, good. Go call 911 for me. All right.
Well, yeah, if they really knew CPR, they should have already done that. Well, they should have said, do you need me to call 911? That's what they should have done. But a lot of people are full of shit.
Yeah, man. So like outside of the job, right? What type of impact did it have on your life outside of the job, you know, regular P, off duty, family man? How did your life change after becoming an EMT and a firefighter?
And let me tell you, go ahead.
Well, sorry. I was just going to say to add a little more to it is I'm pretty sure you started looking at damn near everything differently.
Yeah, you said regular P. The funny thing is, I don't even know who the fuck that is no more. That guy's been gone for so fucking long. And I think you can attest to that. Anyone who's known me for before I got into now will tell you that, man, that motherfucker is not the same. Like, yeah, I crack jokes and stuff, but to say that it didn't have a profound impact on every aspect of my life, I mean, that's an understatement. I honestly really don't know how it changed me, because I don't know how it was before anymore. And that's the most frightening, because I don't know any other way now. And I haven't done the job in 10 years, yo. I've been gone 10 years coming up this December, and I don't know no other way. Man. I just don't know no other way. I don't know what old school P used to be. I really, honestly, truly don't know. Like, sometimes we talk and you say, man, you remember when we did this or you did that? And sometimes I say, man, I don't fucking remember.
I was just about to bring that up, man. Like,
I honestly don't remember.
Man, that should be wild, too, because it's like I can't think of anything offhand. But like for the listeners, it would be something that most people will remember, because we did a lot of shit that left a big impact. We just dumb shit. You know, it's funny. We look back now and laugh. But some of it is like, yeah, man, you remember when you crashed your car into that church and got out? And it's like, man, I got my Jesus juice in my hand. I'm walking home. That's something that most people will remember. And P will be like, damn, I did that.
Hey. Yeah, I don't remember a lot of shit. I mean, I'm like, damn, I did that shit? Wow. Like, I mean,
oh, yeah. Man, I remember what it was, man. I said, look, I was messing with one of P's girlfriend's friends. And of course, being young and dumb, and you know, we hooked up a lot and didn't use protection. So she thought she was pregnant, right?
I mean, who does that? That's for bitches.
Yeah, using protection. Hey, what, you a pussy? Man.
Don't wear a condom or a mask, you stupid. You're a sheep if you wear a condom or a mask.
Man, I remember she thought she was pregnant. And I think she just had this thing where she wanted to be pregnant. She wanted the attention that came with pregnancy. But
I think, you know what? I think, and I'm not trying to like throw her under the bus. Well, I ain't throwing her under the bus. I think she had ended up diagnosed with what's it called? Like fibroids or something?
Cystic fibrosis or some shit.
Had issues. And I want to say she had a hysterectomy since then.
God damn, man. Damn, that's rough, man. But yeah, she thought she was pregnant, and she kept on calling, and she was calling P's girlfriend and calling me like, oh, my stomach feels funny today. And it's like, yo, I just came in you like 3 days ago. Your stomach should not be feeling funny 3 days later. So she just kept it up and kept it up. So it got to the point where P's girlfriend was getting kind of irritated. Like, man, all right, I'm sick of hearing this shit. Like, damn. Have you taken a pregnancy test yet? No, I'm scared. So P said, hey, man, I'm telling you one thing, man. My motherfucking daughter not playing with y'all kid, man, because that bitch stupid, man. I'm not letting my daughter play with y'all kid, man. So I started laughing. I was like rolling. I'm like, hey, man, that's my kid, too, then. And they said, oh, yeah, that's right.
Man, I'm telling you, I don't have not one recollection of that whatsoever. It was another recent thing that you told me I did the other day, but I'm like, shit, man, I don't even fucking remember. It was something that we did, and I don't remember a lot of stuff, man.
Man, that shit's got to be bothersome, man. Because, I mean, my memory ain't the greatest, but still, to start, because when you start looking back at your past, and for me, some of the best years of my life were, even though I spent a lot of time in jail, in juvenile, you know, and in the court system, best times of my life was like from 14, 15 years old to about 19. And I can remember a lot of that shit very vividly. Sometimes I still feel like a lot of that shit was yesterday or last week or a couple months ago. But for me, if I were to start forgetting some of those memories, man, that would bother me a lot, man.
Well, the good thing is I remember the good days that I had. Like, mine were from, you know, as early as I can remember, from like when I was like one, because I can actually remember not being able to talk, which is crazy, up until 89, 90 when my granddad died. Then I had, you know, fun again from about, what, 13 to maybe 16, then had a baby at 18, and worked for the fire department from right after 2000, starting in 2002. I was in the process during 9/11, and then all the way up to 2010. So those so-called prime years of my adulthood are gone, like, especially if they took it away. So, you know, I would be 2 years from retirement now, and seeing all my contemporaries ascending the ranks as deputy chiefs now, fire chiefs, and then those that came years after me are now like chiefs and stuff. And
yeah, moving up the ladder.
You know, wasn't no cell phone cameras. I'd be asking people all the time, like, hey, if y'all see any cameras on any of the work computers, any pictures, let me know. Let me see them, because I'd be dying for just any evidence that I did the job. But I don't have it. Nobody, you know, I'm not asking nobody to care, but I guess that's not a priority for people to do that. But it just sucks, man. Like, you want memories, but at the same time, a lot of the memories that you have are usually tied to something bad.
Yeah.
And you talk to people that don't know, you know, family or whatever, and they just think, oh, here he goes again, being crazy, being this, being that. It's like I always brag and say, I told you motherfuckers about COVID in February. Everything I said happened. Nobody fucking listened, though, huh? It's just everybody knows everything. It's, you know, it's just aggravating. It's, I don't know, man. It's just aggravating because being gone for 10 years, especially. So when I was in, I was Mr. Safety, like Fire Marshal Bill. That was the stupid joke, right? And I'm like, yeah, you think it's so fucking funny until you realize how hard this job is and you got to learn fucking physics just to do it. And then the motherfuckers realize, you know, then when they need your help, they realize you know your shit. Then you don't work there no more. And suddenly that you're an idiot. Like, oh, what do you know? You don't work there. You don't know anything, this and that. So it's just a constant spiral of things that make you frustrated and angry. And, you know, you root for your friends. I'm not no jealous type. You root for your friends and you root for your peers. But at the same time, you do feel a certain way where it's like, man, like, I'm supposed to have been there before them. And I'm sitting here, you know, that should be sucking. But, you know, I mean, I ain't no bitch. What's the point in dwelling on it? You know, I mean, I might get mad, but what's that going
to
do?
Yeah, man, that's one of the things that I liked, too, that in my recertification class, that the instructor said, like, you had a lot of people coming in, they're ex-military, ex-police officers, even current military and police officers. And like before class started, they're all sharing their little war stories, like, oh, yeah, you know, I used to be do the convoys in Iraq, and other dude, yeah, I used to be a state trooper, and you know, back in the 60s, just like, you know, war stories. So dude came in the class, he was like, I'm gonna start this class off by telling y'all this. Look to your left, look to your right. These people don't know you. They don't give a fuck what you used to do. Nope. We're here today.
Most people that tell war stories are lying, because They only talk their war stories to other people that they were with. Like, fire department people, you don't hear us talk about what the fuck we did to just random motherfuckers. Yeah. You wouldn't even know half the time.
Yeah, and why would you want to? If I were in the military and I was doing all these fucking missions, convoys and shit, and dealing with fucking IEDs and all kinds of shit, that's nothing that I would want to talk about. Just certain things. Like, even...
Well, because what kind of reaction do you want a civilian to give you? You know what I mean? It's like, It's like when I used to joke all the time and talk about brains and eyeballs. Yeah. I'm like, I realized I didn't fit in with my wife's friends because they are college educated and shit and didn't live my life. And all I had to offer to the conversation was death, gore, and horrible things. And they look at me like I'm crazy. So I'm like, you know, who the fuck wants to hear about this shit? So I didn't mean to interrupt, but this is kind of a side note. I kind of live a life of solitude and avoid a lot of people that, you know, may be my wife's friends, but not mine.
Right.
Or just people who didn't come up with me because they don't understand. And I can't talk to these people.
Man.
And I get, you know, you really get sick of getting looked at as the fucking weirdo. So it's best to just stay alone
and look by yourself. And look like the weirdo.
I mean, why not? I mean, it's better that people think you stuck up than it is for people to just be uncomfortable because I can't talk about my fucking dorm life experience.
Now,
you know what I mean?
Now that you bring that up too, I wanted to just, you know, give that an honorable mention, the post that you posted. But before that, let's just wrap all this public service up is some of the benefits, some of the positives from the job, because I mean, we sat here, we talked about the death, we talked about how it affected you, how it affected your ability to sleep, how you effectively became diagnosed with PTSD and all kinds of anxiety. Like, what were some of the positives, man? Like, some of the good. And this again is for someone listening that might want to actually do this for a living.
I've probably saved, my kids included, about five people's lives from choking and other medical issues like injuries and, you know, potential broken necks just because of the training and experience. So being, you know, getting the medical experience trains you a lot. Also, the fire experience, being able to identify issues with your, you know, carbon monoxide and you know, knowing how to follow electric wires, making sure you don't got a fire behind your walls, knowing all these little signs and symptoms of things, knowing how to spot gas leaks when you can't smell it because it's no additive. I don't want to say the name of it because nobody's going to know what mercaptan is. When it's no additives to it, you know how to spot stuff. You know, you're trained to spot everything. So that's a benefit. You really do notice a lot of things that can save a lot of people's lives, and just the skills alone from being EMS. I mean, those are vital to use. I mean, yeah. You know, if it wasn't for the EMS skills, two of my kids may have been dead from choking, you know? So those skills definitely come in handy.
And that's something we did, I want to say, Fire Prevention Week, maybe two years ago on Black Law and Legalized, where you described how to help a choking kid, hold him upside down, punch him in the back. And then, like, not the people's first instinct is to do, what's it called? A blind finger sweep where they stick.
Blind finger sweep.
Yeah. It's like, so yeah, that's valuable. Now, was there anything else that was positive from the job? Like any good times that you can remember?
Just the people, you know, the people you worked with, you know, I mean, I was fortunate enough to work with a lot of people who my uncles knew that knew me since I was in Pampas. So, I mean, just those guys, you know, you make lifelong friends, but you lose a lot of them. I mean, I've lost probably, seven, eight, nine different people that I considered friendly and or straight up good friends from cancer from the job. You know, that sucks.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I guess you take the good with the bad, you know? So, I mean, so, sometimes I look at it like maybe I'm blessed that I got out 10 years early because maybe it saved my life. Because I know people, one of my good friends who I used to do carpentry work with was a Masters Olympian. He was an older guy, but he still was a Masters Masters track and field athlete, I'm sorry, and was a beast, played for the New England Patriots, was in the Army and everything, in great shape. Died at the firehouse unexpectedly. He was only supposed to do two more years left to retire. Died right there. I got another friend right now in the hospital after suffering multiple strokes. I lost a couple friends over the last few years. One from colon cancer just, last year? Grew up in New Orleans. He was the one that told me about We Never Close.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah.
He's gone. You know, he's gone now. But then you got the other guys, the friends. And then here's the other thing, too. The people who you do know that you helped. You do know when you do get happy when you see somebody that you helped and you like, yeah, I remember I helped them one day and it make you feel a little good, you know. But I mean, it's not bad. Look, it's not bad. It's not good. My experience was bad because of the administration from the department, the union, the governments, and the court systems. But for some people, it's great. Now, I try not to dissuade people from doing it if they really want to do it. I just tell them what I think is vital for them to know so they don't fall victim to, what's the word I'm looking for? Exceeded expectations. Because if you go into that job thinking everybody's going to be such high professional and great people, you're going to be sadly disappointed when you realize that a lot of these people are scum.
Yeah. And just like the guy that you work with, one of your coworkers stole your rent money.
Yeah, exactly. Man. Stole my damn rent money. Thank God that we got that back.
Man, that was fucked up, man. But anyway, so ladies and gentlemen, that's just our public servant. And, you know, it's good to have people like it's funny because P and I both, we know different people whose expertise is in different things. And, you know, it's such a wide array of things that we are one phone call away from damn near any and everything. You know what I'm saying? You need a doctor, you need a carpenter, you need an auto mechanic, you need a firefighter, you need EMS. No matter what, man, we just know so many people that are very skilled in, you know, very specific areas. And that's one of the things that growing up, man, that I never really thought we would have, man, because we grew up, we was little ghetto kids, man. Who the fuck thought that, you know, 20, 25 years later, we would have all this experience, not only life experience, but like trade, skilled trades, man, because I couldn't see that shit when we was younger, man. A skilled trade? No way. We was going to be working at bagel shops.
We handy, man. I mean, think one of my friends who I did security cam and electrician installs with, and he learned, you know, while he was in jail. He's highly successful now. He does woodworking now. He's self-taught, never spent a day in college, never spent a day in no fucking trade school. Just got his certifications, that's all. One of my other friends learned how to be a barber in jail. Just not having money to do shit. I mean, even though I don't like to, I know a lot about cars. I act like I don't, but I know enough around fixing a fucking car that I know what to ask you to know if I can fix it or not. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You got to know a little bit about something to know what to ask. And just in general, just us being our generation, we had to do stuff. You got to work, you know, you got to know stuff.
Man.
And a lot of us didn't have that benefit of going to college and all that shit. You know, we had to learn on our own, man. Our uncles, grandparents, you know, we learned from doing it.
Or getting electrocuted in front of your house.
That shit was funny. I was looking at you like, young, why you sitting like that? Man, this nigga been sitting like that for a long time.
I electrocuted the shit out of myself. But see, good thing is, I learned never to do that again.
And because I watched you, I learned never to do that for the first time.
Anyway, this has been another episode of A Few Screws Loose / Black Law and Legalized, because like I said, I'm going to publish this episode on both platforms just because of the abundance of information and knowledge that P has, just been a public servant. I know, you know, you hear him on A Few Screws Loose if you listen, and you might hear him on Black Law and Legalize every now and then and be like, damn, man, you know, this dude always talking about he retired and, you know, all he do is raise babies. You know, he has a lot of experience and a lot of insight into being a public servant. So hopefully somebody can walk away.
Somebody thinks so.
Yeah, man. You know, I be trying to tell other people, but they be like, nah, man, that nigga weird, man. He just be in the tub all the time. My name is Dan. Keep up with me on Twitter and on IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. Follow the show, A Few Screws Loose, at Screws Loose Pod on all social media. And keep up with Black Law and Legalize at Black Law Podcast.
And I'm P from Charlotte. You can catch me on Instagram and on Twitter at P from Charlotte. And you can also catch Screws Loose Pod on YouTube at Screws Loose Pod.
Peace.
Peace.